The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
4 minutes after, I'm John Caldera, in for George. Give me a call, 303-696-1971. On the line with me is my colleague and friend, Rob Nadelson, who it's been a struggle for me, but I have finally, I think, brought him fairly up to speed on the founder's intent on the Constitution. I think he's finally gotten a pretty good lesson from me on what the founders really meant when they put the document together. And I think he's finally learned a few things. He is now our constitutional scholar at the Independence Institute. Rob Nadelson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John, and it's wonderful to be on with you.
So Rob has taught constitutional studies for many years at various places, including University of Montana, which is a state school. I was very disappointed that you would work for a state institution. I expected more of you.
Well, John, actually on that, you recall what happened is I took early retirement from the University of Montana, and I came back to Colorado and said I wanted to work with the Independence Institute in order to rectify
some of the sins. and so I've taught you a little bit about I've taught you a little bit about the United States Constitution, and I think you've learned a lot from me over the years, and so I think I think you've finally pulled some things together, and you've come along very well. I'm glad I've been able to mentor you so well. It's been terrific. Actually, you've done. I've learned so much from you. It's just been a joy to hear you talk and learn about things about the founder's intent. All these incredible series you've done for the Epoch Times. You've got a great body of work at our website at thinkfreedom.org. So with all that great,
John, while we're exchanging mutual congratulations here, there actually is something important to say about this. When I was at the University of Montana, while I was producing a lot of constitutional scholarship, as you would imagine, there was very little interest in the law school or the university of actually letting people know about my work. Once I came to the Independence Institute, and actually had been affiliated with the Independence Institute since 1994, but once I came back to work full-time, the Independence Institute, and in particular Dave Copel, the research director, said, let's push out some of this work. Let's let people know that Rob has written about the original meaning of the religion clauses of the First Amendment, for example, or the Commerce Clause. And after Independence Institute started to do that, people started to notice, and justices of the United States Supreme Court and judges on federal appeals courts started to quote my work with some regularity. So it's not enough to do good work. It's also important to be able to let people know about it. And the Independence Institute has certainly served that function for me, and I'm very grateful to you folks for that.
So with all the great work on the Constitution, I thought I'd ask you about plastic bags.
Sure.
Because they flow into each other so well.
Yeah.
Actually, for me, you know, what's funny is we talk about a lot of heady ideas, and the founders were, you know, I think about how hard life was, you know, 250 years ago. There wasn't indoor plumbing, you know, people lived to 30 years old, you know, and still they were dealing with these incredibly, you know, brilliant ideas. Of course, they had you know, casts of characters and servants and slaves, and, you know, they were living lives of leisure. Maybe that's why they could think about these things. I like little things that I can wrap my brains around, like plastic straws and plastic bags. And at the beginning of the year, when people went to Walmart, and Walmart said, no, we don't have any plastic bags. And next year, when the clock turns over, and every store in Colorado has no more plastic bags, people will realize elections do have consequences.
Well, they certainly do. You had an excellent article on the issue on the paper bag law about the time it was passed, and I don't think a lot of people noticed, but you can still find it, John Caldera's article on plastic bags on Complete Colorado. And by the way, all of what we're going to talk about today is also in four separate articles I've written for Complete Colorado. While the founders dealt with big issues, often it was small things that triggered discussion of the big issues. Take, for example, the tax on tea. The tax on tea that was imposed by the British Parliament wasn't very high. People in America easily could have afforded it. But it was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, and it represented to people, by an imposition on the daily life, of some of the costs of tyranny. Now, you go to plastic bags, people really have... Take, for example, things like that the Colorado legislature has done under so-called progressive leadership, like the family leave law. At some level, people understand that that's going to destroy jobs in this state, but it's really hard to think of that in concrete terms. But when the legislature is actually trying to tell you what you can carry your groceries home in, I mean, that does bring it home. That tells people that there is no limit to the arrogance and the pretentiousness and the pretensions of these people. And if they come after your paper bags, they're going to come after every other aspect of your life as well. It's actually a scary prospect. As you know, John, national ratings used to rate Colorado among the freest of all the states. The last rating I saw just before I moved back here was third in the country. And they are rapidly destroying Colorado. They're rapidly destroying Denver. They're rapidly destroying our way of life. They're driving people out and driving those of us who remain to distraction. And we've got to respond. I realize that a lot of people feel, their morale is in the pits these days, but things in politics can change very fast, and we can push back against these people. We must push back against these people.
Even on something as simple as plastic bags? Come on, Rob, it's just a plastic bag. Do it for the environment. We're letting people know we care about the environment. And
it's got nothing to do with the environment.
It has everything to do with the environment. We're reducing our carbon footprint. We're saving Mother Earth. And just because old guys like you and Caldera don't want to use a reusable bag, it's a wonderful way to help heal the planet.
All right, look, some correction here. Number one, Caldera's not an old guy. Number two, if you actually look at the studies, and so I've got some of them linked in the articles on Complete Colorado, actually look at the studies, you find that the carbon footprint, assuming that that's a problem, but that's a discussion for another day, but assuming carbon footprint is really a problem, the carbon footprint for making plastic bags is a good deal less than all the other alternatives. Here's an example of the costs that you face with the reusable bags. Did you know these reusable bags can be health hazards? Do you know that when we were in COVID, our governor, Jared Polis, asked all the cities that have anti-plastic bag laws not to enforce them because the reusable bags spread disease? Do you know also that it's impossible to recycle these reusable bags once they've gotten dirty because the handles stick in the machinery? I'm not an environmental expert, but you look at the studies from those people who are environmental experts, you say to yourself, this bill really isn't about the environment. This bill is about attacking the oil and gas industry, about benefiting certain special interests, and about flexing power over ordinary Coloradans for the sake of flexing power.
I'll go one further. This is about, it's not even about virtue signaling. Virtue signaling is where you wear a t-shirt that says, "We recycle." This is virtue signaling on steroids, where you force others to virtue signal on your behest. So there are so, you know, what's so funny about this is you go into a grocery store and you see all the plastic that is up and down the aisles, all the plastic, you know, the plastic bags in the grocery, the vegetable section that you put your vegetables in. You see the plastic that every package is wrapped in. You see in the meat section, all your meat is wrapped in plastic. You go, I mean, the whole store is wrapped in plastic. And then you go to the checkout, and right there, that last little piece of plastic is gone, as if that is going to make any difference in the world. And you realize it is only symbolic, absolutely symbolic.
Yeah. You know, John, it's, I don't think of it as, well, I guess in a sense it is virtue signaling. It's like somebody jumping up and down on somebody else's back and saying, "See what a good boy am I," you know? I pulled the, or to use another analogy, I pulled the thumb out of the pie. You know, what a good boy am I. And you're right about the plastic. In fact, if you read the law carefully, you will find that the only place that plastic bags, including the retail carryout bags, are forbidden is if they're distributed at the point of sale. In other words, if you're a retailer and you distribute these paper, plastic bags, and by the way, the law also penalizes paper bags, which is idiotic because the entire bill is supposedly aimed at plastic bags, but then they say, oh, by the way, paper isn't any good either. We're going to start charging for that. But if the retailers offer plastic bags anywhere else in the store, including the carryout bags, that's perfectly fine. So what you can do is you can, if you run a grocery store, you can stack a bunch of these bags at the deli counter or at the bakery counter or whatever, offer them to people, they can carry it to the cash register, and they can stick the stuff, their stuff in those, and that's perfectly legal, okay? I mean, if you read the law and you realize that this is all what the Germans would call a bunch of Quatsch. Let me give you an example. They've got a list of exemptions for certain favored groups. For some reason, the plastic bags that are used in laundry places, in dry cleaners, they're not covered by this, even though they're bigger and even though they're in some ways less necessary. There's an exemption for schools. If you've got a retail establishment or a cafeteria or something like that on a school, well, then the schools don't have to follow this law. And when you read the law even more carefully and you go to some of the cross-references, you see that the exemption only applies to government schools, okay? So if you've got a campus store at the University of Colorado, state institution, they're free of the bag law. They don't have to pay attention to the bag law. But on the other hand, if you've got a bookstore or other store on the campus of the University of Denver, that's a private school. They got to follow the bag law. Now, you tell me that a bag that comes out of a private school is somehow more polluting than out of a public school. It's idiotic. Only one of two conclusions. Number one, they didn't know what the heck they were doing. They didn't do their homework. Or two, they're playing political favoritism. I tend to lean toward the latter. Either way, they're incompetent, and they do not have a good sense of their duty, and they need to be removed in the next election.
The my favorite one is I went to a restaurant up in Boulder, and I saw a poster, and it had a picture of a sea turtle with a plastic straw up its nose.
Yeah.
And it said, we use paper straws in this establishment to keep plastic out of the sea. And it was one of those feel-good things that, you know, in the Boulder smugness of, oh, how good we are, we pretentious Boulderites. We don't use plastic straws, by the way, which is now going to be illegal throughout Colorado. God bless, thank us all. So now all of our Coca-Cola can taste like plastic or taste like paper. And I just want to slap people in that you don't seem to understand. No straw from Colorado is going to go up any turtle's nose, sea turtle's nose, unless you fly it out, go scuba diving, and shove it up a turtle's nose yourself. Why? Because if you don't recycle a straw, it will become entombed in a landfill somewhere. Even if it goes into a river, even if you set it free like a gray wolf, and it goes into a stream and goes into a river, it will get caught up in any number of water treatment facilities before it gets into the ocean. There is no way a straw is going to get into the ocean in Colorado. We are a landlocked state, you morons.
Well, you know, there's another problem here. That is the issue with the basic philosophy. I mean, one of the things recited in the bill, and against the bill is a massive confusion, but one of the things recited in it is landfill space. Well, plastic bags, plastic straws actually take very little landfill space. But beyond that, you know, the whole idea of America, the whole idea of American government is that they work for us, right? They take our instructions. And if we say, you know, we really need some more landfill space, then it's their job to find that landfill space, which shouldn't be hard in a state of 108,000 square miles, right?
Right.
But their attitude is that they would rather boss us around than taking orders from us. There is also the issue of information as to who tells whom what, right? We're supposed to give them the orders, and they're supposed to carry them out in government. Their attitude is they're supposed to give us the orders. It's not surprising, therefore, that the six cents of every dime that you pay on a plastic bag goes to local government and is earmarked in part for propaganda. In other words, when you buy a plastic bag at a store, then some of that money is going to go to local propaganda to give you lectures on the environment or recycling. I mean, that's sort of adding insult to injury, isn't it?
The other part of this, and I didn't know this until I did a little research, I didn't know that plastic bags were made out of natural gas. I don't understand the science of this, but that if you people who reuse those plastic bags, you know, you take the plastic bag home, you use it in your bathroom garbage can, and you use it to pick up your dog's waste, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now people will buy bags, and the thicker bags are actually made out of oil. So congratulations, you've just now people will buy uglier, nastier oil things.
Yeah, you know, good. They've also got another part of this law, John, is they've got you're not allowed to make bags out of corn, not allowed to use reusable bags out of corn or similar agricultural products. There's only one agricultural product that they permit that the bag be made of. Take a guess as to what that is. Think about progressive left democratic politics. What's the one material that is okay to make the recyclable bags out of among farm products?
No, it can't be.
Hemp.
Really?
Hemp. That's right. That's right. You see, you see the political alliance between the left and the hemp and the marijuana crew, right? So it's not permitted to distribute a recyclable bag made of corn because corn farmers are probably mostly Republicans. Like those oil and gas people.
That's hysterical. But
it's okay if the bag is made of hemp. They're our people. Hey, I mean, it is so It is so transparent and it is so outrageous.
Hey,
that,
Rob Nielsen, I got to run to a break. Can I hold you over? I do want to ask you about what's going on with Donald Trump, and I'd love to just get your constitutional point of view on this, because I need some help. I've never seen this before, and I'd just love to get your take on it, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure.
All right. Rob Nadelson, Constitutional Studies at Independence Institute. I'm John Caldera, in for George Brockler. Keep it right here. You're on 710 KNUS. It's 31 minutes after 8 o'clock. Good morning and welcome. I'm John Caldera. With me is Rob Nadelson, who's our senior fellow on constitutional studies at Independence Institute. You can check out his work at thinkfreedom.org. Rob, thanks for sticking around. I'm trying to understand something that I don't think has happened in American history. Certainly, we've had presidents who have run again for president and succeeded, run for president again and lost. But I don't remember a president who has been arrested after being president. Usually presidents are kind of left alone. Donald Trump looks like he's going to be arrested for what seems to me like a pretty minor campaign finance violation in a Manhattan court, and then other things might follow. This looks to me like a way to attack a political opponent during a campaign. What am I missing here?
Well, let me just mention one thing from the last segment. We were talking about the Colorado plastic bag law, and I'm going to segue into answering your question in a second. Just to remind people that you can buy retail plastic bags on the internet for a fraction of the 10 cents that they charge you at the cash register here in Colorado. That's what I've done. I bought a whole bunch of those plastic bags, and I bring them to the grocery store and other stores, and I use them that way, my way of pushing back. In my columns on Incomplete Colorado on the bag law, I make the following point, John, and that is that conservatives are always saying that liberals want to make us more like Europe. And that's actually not true, because Europe still has high living standards and they've got mostly market economies. In fact, several European countries are economically freer than we are. What I think the goal, intended or unintended, of the progressive left is to make us more like the third world. And while I made the point in the context of plastic bags, it also applies in the context with the Trump prosecution. You've seen, and people have talked about it all the time, the weaponization of the Justice Department, the weaponization of state and local law enforcement authorities. This is very much the kind of thing that goes on in countries like Venezuela or Mexico or Nicaragua. It is foreign to our traditional Anglo-American jurisprudence, and it's quite scary because it represents a breakdown of the rule of law. The breakdown of the rule of law is necessary for freedom. It's also necessary for prosperity. It's necessary for the ability of our kids to enjoy any of the things that we have enjoyed. And through prosecutions like this, they are busily dismantling the rule of law as part of their larger third world project.
Let me see if I'm following you here, because that's a little scary. Can't one just say, Nadelson, you're nuts. This is the rule of law. The man broke the rule of law. He broke a campaign finance law. He obviously was paying off a porn star to stay quiet during a campaign, and we are using law to bring him to justice. How could you say that we're perverting laws here in a third world way to
well, look,
for
John,
political
in
ends?
First place, In the first place, this is a case that federal prosecutors already looked at and turned down, right? The state prosecutors, however, the prosecutor in place apparently is one of these George Soros-subsidized prosecutors, and they're notorious for this sort of thing. Secondly, those statements that you just made are allegations. They would have to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. But in addition, there are general standards for how we apply the rule of law to people, including presidents and former presidents. And those standards are governed by something we call judgment or discretion. I mean, what really is accomplished, even assuming that he had an affair with Stormy Daniels? And after all, she's a prostitute, okay? She's not exactly somebody of high moral character who's making these allegations. In fact, she's more than a prostitute. She's a super prostitute. You're going to take her word in these circumstances? But even if her word is true, right? And even if if payments under these circumstances are made, apparently there are legal difficulties in actually creating a felony charge here. And what purpose really is served in promoting it, in promoting the charge or prosecuting the charge, other than an attempt to punish Donald Trump? Now, you
brought up a question. I need a little clarification here, Rob. Sorry, I need a clarification.
Go ahead.
You said that the federal prosecutors looked at this and didn't take it up. This guy is a Manhattan DA, not even a state DA. Does that mean that as a Manhattan DA, you know, here in Colorado we have, what, 19 district attorneys across the state? Why is there a Manhattan DA looking at this? Could one of Colorado's DAs, George Brockler, was a district attorney. Could he have brought up a case against Donald Trump if he wanted to?
Presumably, the argument is that these events occurred in Manhattan, and therefore he would be the one to prosecute it. The difficulty that you face with a presidential candidate or anyone of national stature like that is that that person travels to all sorts of jurisdictions all over the country, and all you need is one politically motivated person to trump up a charge and try to make headlines by going after a presidential candidate or similar public figure. I wanted to make the point, and as you well know, John, I'm not a big Donald Trump fan, but I'm very much concerned, more than concerned, about the direction that the far left is taking us, and I would put the Biden administration not on the left but on the far left. In the direction they're taking this country, and a big part of my concern is the way they are handling the legal system again as a weapon.
So, the federal prosecutors didn't look at this. The crime is not that he paid her off, if I understand this. The crime is that it was a campaign finance violation, that she was paid hush money through a lawyer and it wasn't written down as a campaign expense.
Yeah, I think the theory is that he used his own money to pay her, right? That keeping her quiet, and it was basically a settlement suit. I mean, these things happen all the time, but keeping her quiet helped his 2016 presidential campaign, and therefore he's somehow making a donation to his presidential campaign. And that strikes me as strange anyway, because the United States Supreme Court has held that any candidate can give unlimited donations to his own campaign. So again, it's unclear to me, and I admittedly I've not looked at all the papers. I've not even seen an indictment yet, if there's going to be one. But it just has, as somebody who's been a lawyer for over 50 years, it doesn't pass the smell test.
I am fascinated by the way you look at this from a 30,000-foot level, that we're not moving towards a European model of socialism. We're moving towards a third world Nicaraguan view of how to put it, of
crony socialism.
Crony socialism, where we're using, and my opponent is trying to take me out. Let's trump up a charge, pardon the pun,
and
put him in jail for this season here. Let's get him out of the way to make sure that I win the election. I don't know if I see it quite like that, because I think if I'm the left, I want Donald Trump to be the nominee, because there's no way he could win. But I see what you're saying in that he's when I was a kid, I was raised under the ACLU / People for the American Way kind of mantra of the ends don't justify the means. I defend to my death your right to say it kind of worldview. And today, those people have been assassinated. They are too scared to speak up. And today what I see is the ends justify everything.
Yeah.
And okay. I see it every day at the Colorado State Legislature. The ends justify everything. So it doesn't matter what we do. You will fall in line.
Yeah, John, you just handed me a rather big serving, so let me deal with it this way. First, when I make the point that it's not Europe they're pushing us toward, you have to understand that Europe, by and large, has been moving in a free market direction in recent years. Also, European socialism, as it was practiced, for example, in Britain before Margaret Thatcher, always made efforts to respect the rule of law. The rule of law was not fundamentally corrupted, even though they had a semi-socialist system. On the other hand, what the far left is pushing us toward is not just socialism, but it's also corrupt socialism. Next point, regarding the ACLU and the People for the American Way and the alleged civil libertarians, I always thought the ACLU was pretty selective in the rights that they defended. I always thought the ACLU was more about promoting the left-wing agenda than truly supporting civil liberties. There are some old-line liberals out there, Professor Dershowitz is a great example, who are true civil libertarians. They may not believe in economic freedom, but they're also as concerned as I am with the breakdown in the rule of law in this country. So again, we're under attack, and we're under attack by forces that, consciously or not, get their inspiration from the kleptocracies, the corrupt governments of places like Venezuela. They're really soft totalitarians. They see no limits on what they can do for people or their power, which is another way of saying just what you said, the ends justify the means. People don't have any individual rights other than perhaps the right to infanticide, and otherwise we can do anything to them. I mean, that seems to be the philosophy. It is profoundly un-American, frankly. It's un-American, and I'm not using that in an incendiary sense. I'm using it in a precise sense. America has always been about free enterprise, limited government, individual rights, and the rule of law. And all of those are under attack from the kind of people who now populate the Biden administration and who populate the Colorado legislature.
Well, that's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it is. It is. But remember also that we have the power. And I mean, we the people have the power. And we can exercise that power. And the places to start are the initiative process, civil disobedience, the ballot box, neighborhood social media like caucus and so forth. It is time to get organized.
Incredible. Incredible. Hey, Rob, thank you so much. This is a lot of food for thought. How do you think this plays out? Last question, and I'll let you go. How does this play out specifically with Donald Trump? Will he be brought up on charges? I think yes.
You know, John, I wish I could guests, but one of the things I've learned is you don't comment on all the details of cases when you're not particularly involved in them. I can tell you this doesn't pass the smell test. I don't think ultimately it's going to go anywhere, but there is a chance that this prosecutor will indict him. What the odds are, I don't know. But ultimately, the issue goes far beyond Donald Trump. It goes, I mean, look, we've got people, we've got 50-year-old family men who are pro-life being arrested by the FBI in pre-dawn raids. I mean, it's not just Donald Trump. It's a phenomenon that's going on around the entire country, and I think that's what we need to be concerned about.
I got to run. Thanks for everything. Appreciate it. Rob Nadelson, check out his work at thinkfreedom.org. And keep it right here. You're on 710 CAN-US. Hey, it's John Caldera. In for George Brockler. I just got stuck on that wonderful teaser that Stephen Tubbs did. My Dennis who killed his wife. It's like, wow. Wow. My Dennis who killed his wife. How do you handle that? Knowing that the guy who's been in your mouth is a murderer. Wait a minute. He's been in my mouth. He's like jabbing at things and drilling things in my mouth, and he's killed his wife. That's just a tough one to deal with. For those of us old enough to remember, the lovely sex comedies of the late 60s, where you had these sex comedies, but you really couldn't say sex. And so there was one, it was a Jack Lemmon comedy called How to Kill Your Wife. I think it was How to Kill Your Wife or How I Killed My Wife. I'm trying to remember. I'm pretty sure it was Jack Lemmon. And in the usual stupid sex comedy way, he's a cartoonist. And for his comic strip, he would always act out what he was going to do in this the character in his comic strip, and he kills his wife. In real life, he marries this bombshell Italian supermodel, you know, because he's drunk one night and marries this crazy, crazy hot Italian supermodel who he really can't stand in real life. And somebody says, well, you ought to kill her. Oh, my God, that'd be great. How would I do that? And he takes this mannequin and, like, throws it off a bridge or something. And he does that for the comic. And she leaves him. And then he's brought up on trial for killing his wife, when in fact, he just threw the mannequin off the bridge, because that's how, as a writer, he does that so he can do the comic strip. Nobody believes him. And he's at trial for killing his wife, which he really did not do. And the jury is made of all men. Of course, it's 1968 or whatever, so it's all a bunch of white guys wearing neckties. And in the climactic funny scene, he gets up to defend himself, and he talks to the jurors. He says, yeah, I did it. And he takes a little wax pencil, and he draws a little white button on the rail in front of the juror's box. And he says, gentlemen, all you have to do is press that button, and your wife disappears. Would you do it? And then he goes into this beautiful long monologue of how awful your wife is. And the wives of all the jury members are there in the audience of the court. And he gets them into a fury, and all the jury members dive to press the button. And all the wives get angry. Oh, and then, of course, he goes home, and his hot Italian wife is there, and they embrace.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.